All right, we're going to do a 2-minute meditation, and then I'll lead us in a prayer, and then Brandon has an announcement to make. 2 minutes starts now. Great reality.
Great reality.
We acknowledge your presence in this room.
We acknowledge your presence in this room.
We ask that you guide us and direct us.
We ask that you guide us and direct us.
Please set aside.
Please set aside.
Everything we think we know.
Everything we think we know.
About step three.
About step three.
So we may have an open mind.
So we may have an open mind.
And a new experience.
And a new experience.
With step three.
With step three.
Help us see the truth.
Help us see the truth.
Amen.
Amen.
All right, so does everybody know everybody that's in here?
No.
All right, I want you to go find two people you don't know real quick. Introduce yourself and give them a hug.
Hey, what's up, man?
I'm Will.
All right, guys. Excellent.
Let's corral it back in. Yes, that was the announcement.
I mean, it's kind of like there's probably some people that are angry right now, but it's kind of tough to not, like, for me, to enjoy that experience, right? So this one's called Opportunity. A green bird darting in the night. Will you be able to see it? Will you be able to catch it? Cling to Tao like a shadow. Move without a shadow. Times of oppression and adversity cannot last forever. How is the transition made to new and better situations? In the midst of great difficulty, a tiny opportunity will open, if only by chance. You must be sharp enough to discern it, quick enough to catch it, and determined enough to do something with it. If you let it pass, you will be filled with regrets. Stick to spirit like a shadow. Wherever it goes, you go. As soon as it throws something your way, catch it by sheer reflex. It is like the bird. If you try to catch it, you will miss it. If you are always with it, moving at its speed, as much a part of it as its own shadow, then it is easy to seize it. When you act, however, you must in turn have no shadow. In other words, what you do must leave no messiness, no leftover consequences, nothing that will haunt you later. That is one of the ways in which you avoid creating more bad situations for yourself. Your every movement is traceless. So we're all up against an opportunity today, tomorrow, every day of our life, where if we see the opportunity for what it is, we can have an experience with it. If we ignore it or don't notice that it's there, it's gone. To me, that's a lot like God's grace. When we're struck sober or clean, there's a tiny opportunity. You can either do something with it or sit on your rear end or your phone or whatever it is that you're doing right now and miss it. And it's gone forever because that moment can't ever happen again. Or you could focus your energy on it, have the experience with it, and then your life changes. It changes either way. Either changes in stagnation and you slide backwards, or it changes and you grow. So kind of meant to read this at the tail end of what I was talking about before. So this is the 76th verse of the Tao. There's a lot of different translations, and so you kind of have to play with all the different translations of the Tao, because there's only 81 verses, and some of them, the exact same verse, is so different based on the translation. But it's the same thing. So how can the same verse, translated by different people, come out in such different ways, but yet it's the same thing? Because they're looking at it from their own personal experience. You know how many times Scripture has been retranslated?
Right.
A lot. You know, words that used to mean one thing don't mean that anymore, and now they mean something else. I had an interesting conversation with my wife this morning. She was talking about well, are they girlfriend and boyfriend? And I said, well, I think so. And she says, does he call her his girlfriend? And I said, I think he does. And she goes, wow, that's fast. And I'm like, what do you mean? She's like, well, girlfriend implies commitment. And I'm like, okay, it doesn't for me. It just means it's a girlfriend, right? And so she's got her whole set of ideas around girlfriend that are different than what Brandon defines as girlfriend, right? Who's right? Nobody. It's her ideas. So anyway, there's a little tangent. But so verse 76 says, the living are soft and supple. The dead are rigid and stiff. In life, plants are flexible and tender. In death, they are brittle and dry. Stiffness is thus a companion of death. Flexibility, a companion of life. An army that cannot yield will be defeated. A tree that cannot bend will crack in the wind. The hard and the stiff will be broken. The soft and supple will prevail. Set aside what you think you know and be flexible. Move with life. that's what we were talking about and what we were challenging you on as we were going through the second step. So now the third step's kind of weird. Like, there's a lot to it. There's a lot to the mechanics of the third step. I'll read this also. Number one, all spiritual awakening depends on what we make of ourselves inwardly and is minimally affected by outward material, social, or physical improvements. Two, the highway to God is the spine and not some fancied outward staircase to the stars. Three, true spiritual awakening depends on intense aspiration and also on serious effort expanded to keep one's consciousness uplifted toward God. The Lord has no favorites. God, as Yogananda put it, chooses those who choose Him. Four, you will win the Lord's favor not by superfluous efforts such as giving to charity, which is, for all that, a self-uplifting act and will create good karma for you, but by sincere love for Him in your heart. Outward acts cannot ever in themselves bring inner spiritual freedom. Five, you will find God's guidance ever with you. The more you open yourself inwardly to His guidance, accept wholeheartedly, therefore, whatever He sends you in life. His tests can sometimes be very difficult. Try always to refer everything back to Him. Hold back nothing for yourself. So, the first step, we look at our powerlessness and what that really means. Which drives us into the second step, because we realize that we have to have dependence on something else to fix whatever's going on with us. And whatever I used to think that was isn't that, and it's something else, which is what we just covered in the second step. Now, the third step is a decision, right? But there's a lot more to the decisions. I assume you're going to get into some of the mechanics of that decision. But it's simply a commitment that I'm going to do steps 4 through 9. That's it. Okay? And if you really look at the third step prayer and what it says, guys, like, some of you will know what I'm talking about, but literally I flip my book open and boom, page 63. Like that.
Confirmation.
I don't know. I do know. You're right. So it says, God, I offer myself to Thee to build with me and do with me as Thou wilt.
Hold on one second. I just, you know, Brandon made the comment, and he and I know what's going on. I think we like to tell ourselves we do. And I said confirmation. And one of the things I want you guys to walk away from this weekend with is this idea to go out and confirm the presence of God in your life. Look for confirmation. Look for the expectancy of God in life. And that's what Brandon does, but almost better than anyone I know personally. He's always looking for confirmation. And I think him following his intuition ends up confirming for him. And we'll talk about that later, but sorry.
No, it's... I heard an old guy in a meeting say one time, he says, every morning I wake up and I pray that God reveal himself to me today. And I thought about that, and I, what that does for me when I actually ask for God to reveal itself, himself, herself to me, is number one, I'm looking for it. Okay? Number two, when it shows up, it confirms that there's a presence. And number three, I learned to appreciate the interconnectedness of things and how things happen. How I, like, to you, it's so funny because, like, I believe, when I really look at my experience, that God does all this fancy stuff in my life, but when it happens to you, that it's just kind of, oh, okay, whatever. But when it happens to me, it's the coolest shit that's ever happened, right? So what that confirms for me is that my experience with whatever this power is my experience. And it's meant for me. And it hits me and tickles me in different ways because of the way that I experience it, which is the way that I'm supposed to experience it. So when I flip my book open and it turns exactly to the right page, that shit's funny. whatever, it could have happened that you magically turned to page 63 in a book that's got 570 some odd pages in it. Sure. Just like a million monkeys typing on a typewriter randomly in an infinite amount of time can type the Encyclopedia Britannica just by random chance. They can. If you do it for long enough, they can type it. But they're going to revert right back to chaos right after they type it. But there's so much order in the universe. So I don't think a million monkeys typing for an infinite amount of time could actually type that. But me turning this page, that's confirmation for me. And the prayer is just that, the confirmation of the decision. God, I offer myself to thee to build with me and do with thee as thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self, that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always. All right, and then down below that it says that the wording was, of course, quite optional, so long as we express the idea of voicing it without reservation. Okay, so Tarek read one earlier, and I've got random stuff in my notebook. And as a result of doing the unmanageability exercise, having trouble with personal relationships, trouble controlling our emotional natures, kind of experienced, this was years ago, I went through and wrote out some just kind of random thoughts and made a prayer out of it. If I drink, I will die. I won't see my kids. I'll leave unfinished amends. I didn't tell the people I love them. I'll need more insurance, unpaid debt. Family really didn't know about new life. Left dreams aside. Never made my barbecue sauce. I was lazy. More to do. See the world. Sponsees left. Now, if I surrender from a place of power and faith and courage, I will have a spiritual experience. And so then there's a lot of other thoughts, but what it takes me to eventually is, I think, a prayer that you are my Father, my Maker, the Founder of the universe. I am not fully grown. You will lead me and show me how to conduct myself on your behalf. You will interpret what I need and integrate the elements of my life to make my life a success for you. I am only a participant in my life. You will use me in your plan, and I am here to do as you instruct. Now, remember in some of my story that I told you yesterday, my thinking wanted me dead, right? So I'm faced with this reality quite often that if I wanted to die, and that was the choice that I seemingly was going to make, then my life's not my business anyways. And if I really dissect the third step prayer and go into it, what I see is that it's really not about me at all. It's about showing others how this power shows up in my life and has transformed it. Because it's fascinating to me when I'm sitting in a meeting with business associates and somebody says, ask Brandon, he always tells the truth. And I almost choke. Because I'm like, you guys have no idea who you're dealing with. Or the fact that the woman that wanted me dead, other than the child support I was paying her, now counsels me on things. She now calls me when the relationship that she's in is falling apart because he's an alcoholic. And when she needs somebody to change the locks on her house, I get called in. Or when my parents, who I stole six figures from, seek guidance from me in financial decisions. Okay? This is the power in my life. This is the witness that I get to see, that I tell you about, that maybe you guys find somewhat interesting, but you have no idea how interesting it is. Because it's my life. And I know how shitty I was and how shitty I thought. Okay? My outward actions were only part of the deal before. My inward thoughts were worse. So today, for me to not have those thoughts and actions going on is magic. Absolutely. So what I'm going to look at is there's a sentence right after the third step prayer that is it's the disclaimer. Okay, but it comes after the prayer, which is very interesting to me. I think Bill was trying to trick us. So you say the prayer, and then it says, "We thought well before taking this step, making sure we were ready." Well, shit, I just said it. That we could at last abandon ourselves utterly to God, right? So usually when I'm sponsoring a guy, I get him right up to the edge of this prayer, and I send him away. I want you to think about it. I want you to decide if you really want to say this prayer. Because to me, this prayer is scary. It says, God, you bring everything that I've ever done wrong and help me see it so that I can change. Help me see these relationships that I'm tearing down and see them for what they are. The third step prayer is the confirmation that I'm doing steps 4 through 6. If I say the prayer and I don't act, it's my experience personally and in watching others that what comes as a result is pain. You've asked the power of the universe to show you all these ways that you've been selfish, self-centered, dishonest, and frightful, fearful. I want you to show me all those things. And when they come at you, in the beginning, that defense is provided from you for a higher power. But eventually, that subsides, and then you're left with you and all this crap. This is why so many people drink or use around the fourth step, because they take so damn long. Go, go, go. This is not a 2-year process. This is not a 2-month, 6-month process. Go. The fire's behind you. It's coming. Get through it. And when you get through it, the fire's out anyways. It's not that scary. I am amazed at how many meetings I go to that talk about the fourth step, and the people are like, ooh. Guys, I get to find out how I've been living my life improperly. That's exciting to me.
You done?
Yeah.
I'll probably got more later. But okay. I had a great question at the break. A gentleman asked me if I contradicted myself. Because I said, I hope I never find God. And then the big book says the great reality is found deep down within. And the great reality for me is a desire to seek communion with something I don't understand. Okay, it's not that I have found God. I have found an endless desire to search. Okay, does this make sense?
Yeah.
That's what I think when I interpret the big book for myself. Right, the great reality for me is the truth that there is something that connects all of us, and I want to have a deeper, more meaningful experience with it. But I haven't found what the truth really is. I just believe that there is a power that animates everybody sitting in this room, and it's the same power. And so does that make sense for you now?
Well, and as you get deeper into any teachings or learnings, be it math, be it English, be it whatever, there's the parameters that you start from, and then there's the advanced stuff. Because the reality is, and I think you would agree with me, that once I go deep enough inside me, I realize that I'm God and so are you. Mm. And so that the best place for me to find God is out there in you. But wait, I was supposed to look in. Whoa! Different level, guys. We're talking the surface here. You look out, you see the vastness of the ocean. We just want you to come in. Mm-hmm. But there are depths of the ocean that nobody's ever been before. We just want you in the water right now.
Yeah, the spiritual life, I think Brandon will agree, is nothing but contradiction and paradox. Okay? We even have it in our rooms, right? The more hopeless you are, the better hope, the more hope you have. Everything you find here, give it away immediately. That doesn't work out in the real world. So I don't think it's surprising that spirituality also has its form of contradictions and paradoxes. So page 60 in our big book. Says, many of us exclaim, what an order, I can't go through with it. This is after the 12 steps have been read. Do not be discouraged. No one among us has been able to maintain anything like perfect adherence to these principles. The last weekend something hit me. You know, I don't know how many meetings I've been to, but they always talk about these one-word principles behind the steps, right? I don't even know what they are. Somebody tell me, what's the principle behind the first step? Huh?
Honesty.
Second step's hope, right? But the big book just clearly said that none of us have been able to maintain anything like perfect adherence to these principles. What principles do you think they're talking about right there?
Steps.
The steps. A principle is a code or value that you live by. And to me, these are the principles that need to be practiced the most. You know, looking for signs of powerlessness or experiencing your powerlessness would lead you to have a need for power. You know, investigating your current unmanageability from time to time is a principle to live by. Coming to believe and making a decision. That's the second and third step. Those are good principles to live by. All right? I inventory my life on a regular basis. That's a principle to live by. A solitary self-appraisal is insufficient. There we go, fifth step. So I need to share with someone else. There's a principle to live by. But I swear, and this could be me being way off, that I think more people work the one-word principles than they do the damn steps. Right? They come in and work the principles.
How do you work humility? Isn't the act of trying to become humble an unhumbling act anyway? I want to be the humblest guy out there. How do you... What? If somebody's humble, they're humble. And they don't care.
So the point is that we're willing to grow along spiritual lines. The principles we have set down are guides to progress. We claim spiritual progress rather than spiritual perfection. Our description of the addict and alcoholic, step one. The chapter to the agnostic, step two. And our personal adventures before and after sobriety or the first drink or drug, make clear three pertinent ideas. For me, personally, that I am an alcoholic and an addict and I cannot manage my life. That is the truth. That is the truth. For me. B, that probably no human power can relieve my addiction and my alcoholism. That is the light. I must have light. Alright? So A is the truth, B is the light. And see that God can and will if I seek Him. That's the way. The truth, the light, and the way. ABC. If you're not convinced on these three vital issues, I think you ought to reread your big book or else throw it away. So, that's what the original manuscript said. That's not something Tarek just threw in there. So when I'm sponsoring a guy and we get to this point in the book, I ask them, convince me that A, B, and C are true in your life based on what we've done in this big book and looking at your experience from the blank page until now. Convince me of A, B, and C. Because there's no point in going forward if you're not convinced. Because look at how the next paragraph starts. Being convinced, you're now at step three. Convinced of what? Convinced of the truth, your need for the light, and your willingness to enter the way. If you're not convinced, Bill Brown talked about it the other night. Convinced. You have to be convinced of each step as you move through it, I think. So we're at step three, which is we're going to decide to turn our will and our life over to God as we understood Him, or her, or it. Just what do we mean by that, and just what do we do? They're going to answer that question on the next page. So to me, when I'm working with a guy and I want him to, we get this like conversation, self-will, God's will. I'm not a guy that believes in self-will and God's will. I'm going to tell you exactly why, because I'll use my own personal experience. 10.5 years ago, I'm in the middle of my addiction to crack cocaine and alcohol. And if someone was looking at my life and I'd been in and out of the rooms for 3 years, they would have said, Tarek, self-will run riot. That's what Tarek's doing right now. Self-will run riot. Well, now, on the other side of the experience, and I reflect, oh, that was God's will. That was God bringing me to my surrender. So how can something be self-will then and God's will now?
Well, when you're sitting down across from a guy, what is the most powerful experience? All that ripping and running, right?
Yeah.
So wait.
You guys understand what we're talking about here? I'm not trying to make this confusing, but I think there's too much debate. I'm a second step proposition guy. God is everything. Everything includes self-will. And so how I define it when I'm having this conversation with a sponsee is what it looks like to live in self-will is Tarek does what Tarek wants to do when he wants to do it, and he doesn't reflect on how it's going to affect other people. That to me is when we live an unaware, ignorant life.
Messy.
We're self-absorbed and self-identified with our individual consciousness, and that's all we care about. We see nothing else. And so that is step 3, section A, is the being convinced as we roll into what is self-will. And then there's another part to step 3, which is the next sentence. The first requirement is that Tarek and Brandon must be convinced, must be convinced that any life run on their ideas and their belief systems and doing what they want to do when they want to do it without considering how it's going to affect the people around them can hardly be a success. So that's part of step 3, guys. Is your life run the way you want to run it without considering its ramifications and making a decision without even considering any alternatives and just complete tunnel vision? How is that working for you? There's the question. How is it working for you? Not very well if you're in this room on Saturday. This is something you might want to consider. On that base, now they give some wonderful. So now you're asking yourself, how do I look into my life and see if I'm doing this? Okay, here's the first one. In constant collision with something or somebody. So you're having altercations. You are uncomfortable in the presence of certain people. They're getting on your nerves. You can't stand to be in the same room. Every time you're around these people, you seem to want to impose your value system on them. Those are descriptions of constant collision.
They don't treat you right. They don't act how you want them to act. The parade wasn't there for you when you showed up at home. That's me.
Here's another wonderful example, living by self-propulsion. And it falls under the description I gave earlier, doing what you want to do when you want to do it and not considering the ripple effect. That's it. That's self-propulsion. An actor who wants to run the whole show, my favorite description of that is each individual has a value system, right? And we want everyone to live by our value system. I think that's how we run the whole show. So, you want things to be done a certain way, and when they're not done a certain way, we have a problem. We become in collision with those individuals. All this stuff is connected. You guys understand, to arrange the lights, the ballet, the scenery, he's just talking about control. I need control to feel secure. And then in the next paragraph on page 61, in the middle of the page, he says, what is your basic trouble? Are you not really a self-seeker, even when you're trying to be kind? Are you not a victim of the delusion that you can violently twist to pull out a life, satisfaction, and happiness if you manage well? And is it not evident to everyone around you that these are the things you want? And do not your actions make each person in your life wish to retaliate? You throw your hands up and say, what'd I do? These are descriptions of what it looks like to run a life based on quote-unquote self-will. All right? And then we're on page 62. Now they tell you what the problem is. What do you think would have happened if they would have put this paragraph on page 1 of the big book? You think any of us would have stuck around to read the rest of the book? No, they had
you to. Don't know me.
So now they get down to the root of our problem. And this little section here is going to sum up my problem drunk, my problem sober. This is can be part of untreated alcoholism and addiction. Selfishness and self-centeredness, that we think is the root of Tarek's troubles. Tarek at times is driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity. He steps on the toes of his fellows and they retaliate. Sometimes they hurt Tarek, seemingly without provocation. I didn't do anything to deserve this. But invariably, that's always, Tarek finds that at some time in the past, he made a decision based on self, which has now placed him in a position to be hurt. This is the truth of my life. My troubles, I think, are basically of my own making, every single one of them. Okay? They arise out of myself, and Tarek is an extreme example of quote-unquote self-will and riot, though he usually doesn't think so. Above everything, Tarek must be rid of this selfishness. He must, or it's going to kill him. God makes that possible. Huh, I can't do anything about it. There often seems no way of entirely getting rid of self without God's aid. Many of us had moral and philosophical convictions galore.
But do the next right thing.
Live and let live.
Think the drink through.
First things first.
Avoid people, places, and things.
Halt! But we can't live up to them even though we want to. Neither can we reduce our self-centeredness much by wishing or trying on our own power. We have to have God's help. So they just, that's the, some cold, harsh truth right there. Tarek, your selfishness is going to kill you and you can't do a thing about it. You have to have God's help. That's the short version of that paragraph. So let's talk about this concept of driven. Okay, because I'm a firm believer that spirituality is not something outside of life. It's not ethereal. It is embedded in everyday life and existence and in relationships. And really what they just talked about for two pages is relationships and how we show up in relationships. Okay?
Can I read this real quick?
Yes.
So this is out of 12 and 12. And like the first time that I actually listened to this, I was like, what? So it is but from our twisted relations with family, friends, and society at large that many of us have suffered most. We have been especially stupid and stubborn about them. Here's some bad news for you. The primary fact is that we fail to recognize is our total inability to form a true partnership with another human being. Our egomania digs two disastrous pitfalls. Either we insist upon dominating the people we know, or we depend upon them far too much. If we lean too heavily on people, they will sooner or later fail us, for they are human too, and cannot possibly meet our incessant demands. And this way our insecurity grows and festers. When we habitually try to manipulate others to our own willful desires, they revolt and resist us heavily. Then we develop hurt feelings and a sense of persecution and a desire to retaliate. As we redouble our efforts at control and continue to fail, our suffering becomes acute and constant. We have not once sought to be a family, be one in a family, to be a friend among friends, to be a worker among workers, to be a useful member of society. Always we tried to struggle to the top of the heap or to hide underneath it. This self-centered behavior blocked a partnership relation with any one of those about us. Of true brotherhood, we had small comprehension. Anybody in here that's doing something else than being here and present is being explained perfectly right there. I'm better than these guys. I don't need to listen. Or these guys don't know me. My problem's bigger than theirs. Either way, I'm on the top or I'm underneath it. I'm not part of. Different.
So we've covered two parts of step 3. The ABCs, being convinced, no need to go further if you're not. You got to see that your life went on your ideas and your beliefs can hardly be a success. Otherwise, you wouldn't be sitting here on Sunday. That's the third step requirement. And before we roll into the third step decision, I want to read a few things. The world is your problem, and to comprehend it, you must understand yourself. This understanding of yourself is not a matter of time. You exist only in relationship. Otherwise, you are not. Your relationship is the problem. Your relationship to property, to people, to ideas, and to beliefs. This relationship is now friction, conflict, and so long as you do not understand your relationship, do what you will, hypnotize yourself by any ideology or dogma, there can be no rest for you. This understanding of yourself is action in relationship. You discover yourself as you are directly in relationship. Relationship is the mirror in which you can see yourself as you are. You cannot see yourself as you are in this mirror if you approach it with a conclusion and an explanation, condemnation, judgment, or justification, or the assignment of blame. So this is a book by one of my favorite authors, Jay Krishnamurti, and he's a philosopher. And to me, this is where our problem resides when we put the drugs and the alcohol down. There's an ongoing surrender. This is the second surrender. Like my first 18 months, nothing changed about my character other than my willingness to do whatever I had to do to never smoke crack again. Okay, I knew I had to seek God. I knew I had to sponsor people. I was doing some prayer, made a ton of amends out the gate, laid those aside, didn't really understand the 10th step, but I started to suffer. And when I look back on my experience, what I realized is I had not had a surrender in the third step. I had a surrender in the first step. And now I'm a guy that believes there's a surrender in every step. And it's really all connected back to the surrender in the first step. Okay. Driven. Let's look up this word. Compelled or impelled to steer. To forcibly take a course of action guided by another force. Huh. That does not imply power. That implies powerlessness. That implies no choice. When we are driven, we are consumed with self-centered, selfish behaviors. In an unaware state of consciousness, we're driven through life by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity. Now, this is a little sheet I've put together over years of sitting in meetings and listening to my teachers and having discussions with Brandon. So I decided to create this little thing. This is a workshop we do at my program. It's called To Be Driven. This is where I got this from. So we're driven through life by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity. Let's look at driven versus choice. Ask yourself this question. Do you have an area in your life right now which you are being driven versus making a choice? You cookies. Can identify. Go ahead.
Cookies.
Oh.
Desserts.
You can identify these areas or this area by looking for fear, a lack of consideration, and a constant state of reaction, not responding. The greatest trick the egoic mind plays on us is convincing us that clean and sober, now we're making choices. But when we look at these so-called choices, they're insane. I now understand I wasn't making choices. I was being driven. There is no choice because in self-will, quote-unquote, there can't be a choice. There's only the manifestation of how I think my self-will should be manifested in this situation. The concept of choice comes from a state of neutrality with unselfish intentions. It's an intellectual sorting out process in which I am presented with options. I consider my options and I either reject or deny or accept the options. There's a reason the authors of the big book don't use the word denial. I talked about this last night. I don't think it was a matter of vocabulary, but instead a deliberate effort to drive home the concept of loss of choice. This also applies after we put the drugs and the alcohol down. Instead, they use words like illusion, delusion, and obsession. Anybody suffered from delusion, obsession, and illusion way after the drugs and alcohol went away?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, good. My people, yes. All of which signal a low state of consciousness in which one cannot tell the difference between what's true and false. In this state of consciousness, we have no choice but to be driven, without choice, and most likely harming other people. Obsessions and loss of control can be experienced with so much more than mind-altering substances. When we are driven in life, it's very possible we're experiencing an obsession, and loss of control. Look at your personal experience today. What does it tell you? Okay? It's about, and this is what affects our relationships. And if what they're about to tell us in the big book once we start resentment inventory, that if I'm shut off from the sunlight of the Spirit, I'm shut off from power. And they're talking about resentments, which have to do with relationships. So if my relationships are sideways, I'm isolated and I'm cut off from the very power. Even though the power is within myself, isn't that a contradiction? Question? Yes, sir?
Yeah, I mean, I don't mean to challenge you, I guess, but like I have a drive to get sober and stay sober. I have a drive to provide for my family. I have a drive to do well for myself.
I think you're confusing goals with being driven. Okay, so when I'm driven, it's like tunnel vision. There is no intellectual sorting out process. There's only the idea of what I want to happen in the very end. Okay? Now you say you're driven to be sober, right? And so are you driven to take those actions just for your sobriety, or where does your relationship with a higher power come into this? Or is it completely what you how you think you're going to keep yourself sober?
Yeah, right now I'm still trying to figure that out.
Okay. Let me, so we'll talk more about it when we get to 10 and 11 about vision and creating a vision for your life and what you want out of it. And we in the third step prayer, we turn our will and our life over the care of whatever this thing is, right? Okay. By the time we've gone through 4 through 9, some of the governors are taken off and we actually gain access to whatever that power is, okay? And in the doctor's opinion, it says that we get to recreate our life, okay? And I get to co-create with whatever this power is. And it's my belief that if you gave me the power of the universe back when I was doing what I was doing, there's all sorts of people that are dead and like havoc everywhere, because if I get to actually choose who lives and dies, you cross me, you're dead. Right?
Yeah.
That's right. Motherfuckers. Don't mess with me. Right? But if they have the same power, I'm probably dead too. So as I go through 4 through 9 and I get to see how I got a distorted sense of reality, and I start to make those amends, and I start to see how my actions have affected other people, my view of reality shifts to where I don't want to harm the world as much, and so I gain access to more power, which allows me to create a vision of my life that's more in alignment with the river, the lazy river that I'm floating down. And shit just accelerates, right? So what I challenge you to do in anything we say is to look the words up and see what they mean for you, right? Any of them. Because when I don't know about you, but I like to think that I know what words mean. Until I look them up, I'm like, well, damn, it doesn't mean anything close to what I thought it did.
And that definition is out of the dictionary. It's one of the definitions for the word driven. All right, so I don't know if maybe in your mind, motivation, it's not the same as driven, okay, to be motivated. And, you know, Brandon and I talk. I cut you off?
No, you're good.
Brandon and I talk at least 5 days a week, sometimes 6. And a lot of our discussions, not every time, but a lot, they hinge on us reflecting on our conduct in our life. And so an aspect of trying to live a God-centered life, quote-unquote God, remember the three-letter word, we don't have a better one right now, is reflecting on how I show up. See, in a driven state, I never reflect on anything. There's only the vision in a twisted way of what I think this is supposed to look like, and I'm going to move everything I can to make this happen, right? That's not how I attack my recovery or provide for my family. It's not like that. There is a significant amount of self-examination that takes place in my life, and self-recognition is when I become accountable with Him. You know, and we don't do it every conversation, but it's an important part of what we do. And I think that's what driven is devoid of, is self-reflection.
The funny one that's coming to my mind is, has anybody watched the show Ozark at all?
Yeah.
And the guy that's growing the poppies and doing all that stuff with the poppies, right? Well, I finished watching the first season of that show, and I start researching poppies, right? Of like can you really just, you know, do all this? And I'm starting to realize that I'm like thinking about all the money I can make. So I call Tarek, right? I'm like, dude, look, I'm like trying to figure this crap out, and I just want you to know that these thoughts are here, because the idea of quick money was driving me to do something maybe that I wouldn't want to do. But the realization that I can't keep going this way makes me call Him, which really isn't of me, because old me would have just kept going down that route, right?
So, sorry.
Yeah,
I guess I see what you're saying. Like, a lot of times when I set a goal, I'll put other things aside in order to achieve that goal. That's kind of what you're saying?
Yes,
right. And again, black and white is bad, right? Weather balloon, UFO, right? Driven goals. It could be something in between, right? It's play with it. Don't. Our minds get fixed on something, and it's like, no. I'm right here. Something shiny. Oh, it's what happens. So open to possibility. Okay,
that's awesome. So step three, section C, part C, the bottom of page 62. See, a lot of people think the third step prayer is somehow the decision, but it's not. It says this is the how and the why of it, from the question from the previous phase, which just what do we do about it? And it says, well, first you have to quit playing God. Why? Because it doesn't work. Next, you're going to make a decision, decide, that hereafter in this drama of life, now we're going to talk about a contract. And so, you know, the way it's been explained to me over the years is you're going to, literally in the third step, your life is no longer your business, but your conduct in your life is your business. And so you're responsible to reflect on your conduct. And I love the guy that's explained it to me like that. So God's going to be the director. Look up the word director. I'm going to be the actor. Those are different responsibilities for those two roles. God's going to be the principal, and I'm going to be an agent. I get an agency empowered to do the work for God. Huh. That's pretty fucking cool. He's the father, and I'm his child. Most good ideas are simple, and this concept is the keystone of the new and triumphant arch through which we're going to pass to freedom.
So, what do all those imply? Director, actor, principal, agent, father, child. There's different kinds of relationships, right? And each relationship, it's assigning a role to each of them, right? It's an interaction. See, to me, like the exercise of looking up director, actor, principal, agent, father, child is important to me, because what that's explaining to me is that Bill in the first 100 couldn't come up with, this is the exact relationship that that you're going to have with God. It's going to be something like these three things. So explore what those relationships look like. And then make your decision based on those ideas.
So, the decision. This is where I also do what Brandon does, and I have them think about it. Think well before taking this step, and then we affirm the third step by doing the third step prayer. Now, the first three steps are a series of considerations. I really look at the first step as self-examination. You're looking into your experience to find powerlessness, so that's self-examination. Then you're looking at unmanageability, both the external and the internal, and that's self-examination. And then you turn towards God. That's when I said I use the word orientation. You orient yourself towards a power greater than yourself. So you're going to have to ask yourself, what attitude am I going to have towards this power? All right? I'm going to think honestly. I'm going to lay aside prejudice with God's help. And I'm going to search diligently within myself. That's the orientation. Now, the third step is where I go for it. I go for it. And the easiest way to look at the third step decision is it's a decision to work the rest of the steps. Right? But I love the language in the third step. Okay? Because what Brandon said at the very beginning is why Brandon and I are here this weekend. Literally, all Brandon and I are doing is we're testifying. We're just trying to use our testimony of what this process and living what we think is a God-centered life has done for us, in hopes that it will wake you up. Wake up! Wake up. That's all we're here to try to do. And I guarantee you it's not going to be a lot of people in here. Just my experience tells me that. Now, there's a part of me that wants you to be saying, fuck you right now. Who does this guy think he is? I'll show him. I'm going to do this work and have my experience. And if that happens, look at the trick I just played on you. That's cool, right? It's okay. Do it in spite of me. Please.
I had a guy that he kept relapsing. He kept moving back in with his parents, and I told him, look, I don't think you're going to get and stay sober until you are not invited back into your parents' house. And he said, I think you're wrong. I said, prove me wrong, please. Well, he proved me right. I'm not happy about that. I get proved right a lot, and I'm not happy about being right. When I know somebody's headed for a relapse, and I tell them so, and then they relapse, I'm not like, yay, I showed them. This is not good news. This is bad news. But people don't hear it. There's people in here that might even be looking at us that are not hearing a single damn word we're saying. And here's the reality. It doesn't really affect me one bit.
Of course, I have to open this book.
I want to read something, then whoever wants to join us, we're going to say the third step. Okay, and then I'll lead us in the third step prayer. And I'll say it in sections so we can all say it in unison. You don't have to participate. If you want to get on your knees, you can. You don't have to. This is very open-ended, and that's going to close the session. But I do want to read something out of a Thomas Merton book, another one of my influences. And it just happened that, you know, it says step three on here. So if you want to have a spiritual life, you must unify your life. A life is either all spiritual or not spiritual at all. No man can serve two masters. Your life is shaped by the end you live for. You are made in the image of what you desire. To unify your life, unify your desires. To spiritualize your life, spiritualize your desires. To spiritualize your desires, desire to be without desire. To live in the Spirit is to live for a God in whom we believe, but whom we cannot see. To desire this is therefore to renounce the desire of all that can be seen. To possess spirit who cannot be understood is to renounce all that can be understood. To rest in spirit who is beyond all created rest, we renounce the desire to rest in created things. By renouncing the world, we conquer the world, rise above its multiplicity, love that word, and recapitulate it in the simplicity of a love which finds all things in creation. This is what Spirit meant when he said that anyone who would save his life will lose it, and he who would lose his life for the sake of the Creator would save it. So we're asking you in the third step to lose your life, to abandon your life. Your life's no longer your business. So let's have a few moments of silence, and I'll lead us in the third step prayer, and we'll close out this session. God, I offer myself to Thee, to build with me and to do with me as Thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self, that I may better do Thy will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help of Thy power, Thy love, and Thy way of life.
May it always be done as it always is.
All right. Let's take a 15-minute break.